Last week, Matt launched a new series on the book of Hebrews, and he called it Listen, because in times past, the Lord spoke through the prophets. God gave a word to his people through the prophets, but in these last days, he spoke it to us in a very real and tangible way by sending his son in the flesh. And then God also wants to speak to our community, our local church, and that we should listen, we should give ear to what God is saying to us. And so I've been praying about it, I've been studying and focusing on the Lord, and the verse that I was given was Hebrews 1, mostly verses 2 and 3. And I believe that what the Lord wants us to know today is that Jesus is supreme. That Jesus is better than everything else. And so that's why I've entitled this The Seven Ways That Jesus is Greater Than Everything, as it's explained by the book of Hebrews in these two verses. The seven ways that Jesus is greater than everything. And I've got to figure this out, because how do I turn it on again? I just can't see it very well. So that's okay. What do I do? Okay. All right. In these last days, God has spoken to us through his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he also made the world. And he is the radiance of his glory, the exact representation of his nature. And he upholds all things by the word of his power. And when he made purification for sins, he sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. Isn't that powerful? That is a powerful passage right there. So what I want from this discussion today are three things that you get. Number one, a high view of Christ. Okay? That Jesus is supreme. Jesus takes the highest places in our mind and our hearts. Number two, a high view of Christ. And I have a third point, and I'm pretty sure you know what that is. High view of Christ. Okay. Because a high view of Christ is going to give us the proper perspective. Okay? As we face trials, and as we face hardships, and as we bring these kids into our home, we've got to keep Jesus into view. It's going to give us the proper perspective. And that's going to make a huge difference in the way that we experience our trials, because all of us are going to have trials. All of us are going to have hardships. And it's going to make the difference in the way that we experience trials and in the way we experience and enjoy life as well. So in the book of Hebrews, okay, there are 22 mentions, 22, about Jesus, how Jesus is better, superior, or greater than the thing that it's being compared to, the thing or person that it's being compared to. And in fact, it weighs very heavily on this. The word better occurs 11 times. The word superior occurs 4 times. And we see the word greater, it appears 7 times throughout the book of Hebrews. So this is a very big point in the book of Hebrews. In fact, my wife asked me this morning, what is the one thing that you can tell me? One, probably because she didn't want me to talk about it for 30 minutes. She said... She said, what is the one thing that you learned during your study on the book of Hebrews? And I said, what I didn't realize, because I've read the book of Hebrews many times, okay, and I've gotten little tidbits, you know, here and there of like, wow, this is so powerful, this is so awesome. But what I didn't realize is the entire book talks about how incredible Jesus is. So that's what I didn't know about the book of Hebrews, probably more than any other book in the Bible. It talks about how Jesus is better, superior, and greater than everything else. So we see the comparisons against Jesus are the prophets, and these are people, messengers, from people that God spoke to give a word, says that he's better than them. The angels, they're messengers, heavenly beings. God said Jesus is better than them, is what the book of Hebrews says. Moses, the deliverer of Israel, who performed miracles by the hand of God, Jesus is better than him. Joshua, who was the successor of Moses, better. The high priest, the one who was in charge of the other priests and he who performed the the atonement, on the Day of Atonement, performed the sacrifices. He stood for God better than the tabernacle, the place of worship, the place where God's Shekinah glory would come and fill the temple. Jesus is better than that. The law and the sacrifices, better. So the target audience, we don't know exactly who the audience is, but we know that they were probably Jewish believers, okay, who were having a hard time. They were having struggles because they were getting persecution from their friends, from the government, from the Jewish culture. They were getting persecution, and they were being tempted to go back into their old ways. They're being tempted to go back into Judaism. So this is primarily who we're looking at. And so that's why he's saying, Jesus is the better way. And that you should stand strong because he is. So how does that relate to us? We don't have a high priest. We don't have a tabernacle. We don't have, we have the Bible, but we're not the Jewish society living out the Jewish laws, right? So how do we relate that to us? I think that there are things in our life that battle against that place of superiority in our minds, right? So that throne of superiority that we battle with in our minds. So I'll ask the question, and hopefully I'll get a few answers. You can raise your hands. What are some of the things as 21st century Christians that challenge that place of superiority in our hearts? What are some of those things that challenge our Christianity here in our culture? Education systems, right? Our comfort, absolutely. Time, that's a big one, absolutely. How about, what's that?
The world.
Yeah, worldly influences, absolutely. So the way Hebrews argues, I believe, to overcome these challenges, to overcome these pressures to conform to the world is to make Jesus Lord of all. To put Jesus on the highest place. Sometimes that's hard though, because we tend to get distracted. We tend to get distracted. I find that when I sit down in prayer, often my mind wants to go here and there. I got a lot of things going on. You know, at the very basic level, that's not drawing me away from Christ ultimately, but that is at the very basic level, it's I'm being distracted, and God has reminded me, I want to be the first place. I want to be the first place that you go. But we're like moths to a flame. You might be able to see it. This is actually a bug zapper. And why is that guy showing me dead bugs on the screen? I don't know. But it's the idea that, you know, for this reason, we must pay closer attention to what we have heard so that we do not drift away from it. This is Hebrews 2, verse 1. Okay, this is a theme in Hebrews. For this reason, what is the reason that Christ is supreme? We must pay closer attention to what we have heard so that we do not drift away from it. So that's my challenge to you. So scientists are trying to figure out why moths and why bugs are being attracted to light. You know, they've done a lot of research, they've done a lot of experience, but they don't actually know what it is. Things like, maybe it's that it confuses their navigational systems. Maybe they think it's like the moon or something, and they're going toward the moon, and they get confused, and pop. or maybe it's like they see visual distortions on the outside of the light. Maybe there's dark spots that they try to retreat to, and as they get closer together, they get confused and pop. So the question I pose is, which light are we being drawn to? Okay, which light are we being drawn to? Again, for this reason, we must pay closer attention to what we have heard so that we do not drift away from it. And I love that song. You guys remember the song? And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. That's a beautiful song. It goes nicely with what I'm talking about. Okay. So I've made the argument, and I've identified that Hebrews is largely focused on the idea that Jesus is greater than fill in the blank, okay? So in these last days, he has spoken to us through his Son, who has appointed, he's appointed heir of all things. And I'm going to give you the seven ways that Jesus is greater than everything according to Hebrews. Number one, Jesus is the heir of all things, through whom, boy, I imagine this is going to be a lot easier than this. What do I point to? Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. All right. Through whom he made the world. That's thing number two. And he's the radiance of his glory. And he is the exact representation of his nature. And he upholds all things by the word of his power. I got to get through it because my next slide is after this. So, when he had made purifications for sin, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. So those are the seven things. That, number one, that Jesus owns everything. He made everything. He is God's glory. He is God's imprint. He upholds everything. He saves us, and he has won the victory. He said, it is finished. Isn't that incredible? There's a lot packed into that passage, isn't there? So in ninth grade, I thought I was going to share the gospel with my teacher. And so she gave us a math test. It was my math teacher. And it was the fill-in-the-blank kind. And I wrote in to all the blanks on the test, Jesus is the answer. Jesus is the answer. Jesus is the answer. Didn't go quite so well. She called me after class. So, but anyway, we see that this is kind of the point of Hebrews. Number one, he owns everything. All right. Jesus owns everything. So an heir is a person who has a legal right to an inheritance. So Jesus has the legal right to all that exists. And all that exists, there's a Greek word called pantone. Okay, pantone. How many have heard that word pantone? Okay, great. We have a modern application of that. Does anybody remember what that is? Yes, it's a color system that we've created, and it's based upon that Greek word. It's a color system that consists of 2,000, in case you're writing notes and you really care, 2,161 colors, okay? It doesn't represent all the colors. In fact, scientists think that there are about 10 million colors, no, only in our visual spectrum, right? Outside of that, there are 18, can anybody think of a word that is like almost infinity? Infinity plus one. Oh, pretty close, pretty close. Decillion, okay, if you care. It means it's about as close to infinity as we can get. So, if Jesus owns everything, the Bible's got to tell us some things that he owns, right? So, we read in John 6:37 that all that the Father gives me will come to me. So, what does the Father give the Son? People. Well, the Father gives the Son disciples. We see the same in John 6:39 through 40, John 10:29, John 17:2 through 24, and a lot of different places that the Father gives the Son disciples. In Psalms 2:8, prophetically, the Father says to the Son, ask of me, and I will give the nations as an inheritance to you. Okay, so we go from, you know, just people. No, we're talking about the nations. The nations as your possession. Romans 4:13, it says that he is the heir of the world, the entire world. Hebrews 1:4, which hopefully it will be talked about next week, it says that he has been given the name that is higher than the angels. So then the heavenly beings, he's inherited a name that's greater than the angels. And we could go on. Lots of references in the Bible to that. So the question is, does the fact that Jesus owned everything, knowing that, does it change something for you? How does that make you feel? What do you call somebody? If Jesus owns everything, what does that make us? There's a word for it. Huh? He owns us. That's right. Steward. Thank you, Matt. We're stewards of what he has. So that should change the way that we think about our stuff, right? So, second thing here. Jesus made everything. So he not only owns everything, but he made everything, right? Through whom he also made the world is what it says. So Jesus has dominion over the world because it's uniquely his creation. Now, you might be interested in this. Made the world in Greek, and I think Matt touched on it last week, is the same thing as he made the ages. And the word for made the ages is, the word for the ages is aeonis. I actually listened to the word. It's aeonis. When I say the definition is ages, or the word that we use is ages, and I give you the word aeonis, what does that sound like? Eons, that's right. That's where we get the word eons. And the word aeonis means a space of time, an age, a cycle of time, especially of the present age, as contrasted with the future age, and one of a series of ages that stretches to infinity. Right? So we have that word infinity again. So Jesus not only made, not only owns infinity, he made infinity. Isn't that pretty powerful? That is so powerful to me. In Colossians 1:16, it says, "For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and the earth, the visible and the invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him." So what does this mean for us? I think primarily it means that he gets to do with what he wants with us, right? He gets to do with, and it's our job. And it's our job to submit ourselves to him, to his lordship. That's our job. So doesn't that impact our lives? It does. When we see Jesus as Lord of all, the one who not only owns everything but made everything, that changes our thinking as Christians. And that's one thing that is going to set us apart from any other human being on this earth as Christians. We have this high view of Jesus, and it makes all the difference in the world. So the next thing is that Jesus is God's glory. Yeah, there we go. Jesus is God's glory. And it says he is the radiance of his glory. And the Greek word means shining forth, luminous, like a light from a luminous body, like the energy that emits from the sun. You know, we can't directly look into the sun. Keep telling my daughter that. You're not supposed to look directly in the sun, but you can feel the energy that comes from the sun. You can feel the heat. You can see the light. It lights your way. You can experience the sun is what brings life to the earth. John 1:18 says, "No one has seen God at any time. God, the only Son who is in the arms of the Father, that Jesus has explained God." It says that he has explained him, okay? So, just like the radiance of the sun, it shows us that there's a sun, right? The Son of God, in human form, has explained the Father. The other thing to consider is that the Hebrew equivalence to this word for radiance, you might find interesting, is Shekinah. You guys ever heard the word Shekinah? It was the glory of God. The glory of God. Or God's divine presence. So Jesus is the radiance of the glory of God. So isn't it comforting to know that the God of the universe is not distant from us? The God of the universe, the one who made the universe, the one who has control of the universe, has revealed himself to us in the form of his Son. I think that's really powerful. Another thing is, since he is God's glory, are we reflecting God's glory? And that's what we're supposed to do as God's people, is we're supposed to reflect his glory. So are we doing that? How are we doing at that? So the other thing is that Jesus is God's imprint, that he is the exact representation of his nature. You know that the Greek word for exact representation is character. Character. No, literally, the word character. It's spelled as C-H-A-R-A-K-T-E-R in the Greek, and I'm assuming that we got our word from that word. Character, that's the exact representation. The term means an impression, a representation, an exact reproduction, a graving tool, like an insignia being impressed into a wax seal. That's what Jesus is. And Colossians, and obviously God the Father is spirit, right? He's not flesh and blood, but it says that in Colossians 1:15 that Jesus is the image of the invisible God. The image of the invisible God. So we were created, this is Imago Dei, we were created in the image of God, right? When God made Adam and Eve, it says that he created them in the image of God. But in light of who Jesus is, we can really see that we've fallen short of the ideal pattern, right? We've fallen short of the glory of God in light of who Jesus is. So we need to look to Jesus as an example of what to become. In Colossians 3:10, it says, put on the new self, which is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created it. That means Imago Dei needs something, means that we need to renew ourselves, right? In order to become what God has designed. In Ephesians 5:1, it says, be imitators of God. We can look at our own lives and evaluate, are we being imitators of God? What about in the area of love? You know, what about in the area of humility? What about in the area of sacrifice? As we look at the sacrifice that Jesus made by laying his life down for humanity, are we looking to that example and imitating him and taking that into our homes? So the other thing is that Jesus... Are we dead? You want to switch that for me? Okay, I got it. Jesus upholds all things. It says he upholds all things by the word of his power. Oh my gosh, when I saw this verse and I'm like, wait, I'm talking on that? He upholds all things by the word of his power? I was looking for an exclamation point in the Greek. It's not there. But it's like that's amazing, right? That Jesus upholds all things by the word of his power. I mean, what would it change our life? How would it change our life if we really agreed with that? If we really believe that Jesus has everything in control? I mean, think about the atrocities against Ukraine right now. It might seem like things are falling apart, right? Think about, I mean, we were just in the clutches of COVID. And I like sci-fi movies, and I'm thinking like, boy, this is like the apocalypse, right? Or it could become that. So it kind of seems like things could be falling apart, but when we have a heavenly perspective, we see that Jesus has it all under control. So God sees the bigger picture. Jesus being the creator of eons, time spans, he has an eternal perspective. Not just this microscopic human perspective that we have. He has an eternal perspective. Romans 8:28, it was talked about in the first service, and we know that God causes all things to work together for the good of those who loved God, who are called according to his purpose. So God has a plan. So does knowing this help encourage you to stand strong in the face of adversity in your trial? Boy, it sure does me. Then, not only that, Jesus saved us, and he won the victory. We could talk about that as a whole. Jesus saved us and won the victory. It says, when he made purification for sins. So in the weeks to come, we're going to see that there's a lot of talk about ceremonial cleansing and the priests and all that. But Jesus paid the price once and for all for our sins. Once and for all. We don't have to keep going back to this old legal system and these old sacrifices. We don't have to keep going back to that. He paid it once and for all. And then when he sat when he died on the cross, he said, it is finished. It is finished. That means the work is complete. So can anybody, maybe a kid or somebody, quote John 3:16? You got it. Keep going. Oh, thanks. That was pretty good. All right. And the final point here is that Jesus won the victory. It says, then he sat down at the right hand of God. So you might, there's many places in the Bible, many places. I found over 100 references where it talks about sitting down at the right hand of God, where the vast majority of those were about Jesus. So there's tons and tons. So like, what does this mean? Okay. So I heard a commentator say something that, I read about a commentator. I don't know. My brain just went there. I read a commentary. Okay. about this. And what he said was that the priests of the old, they would continuously atone for and do these sacrifices and do these rituals, but they would not have, in the structure that they had in the tabernacle, they didn't have a chair. And the reason why they didn't have a chair is because the work of atonement and these rituals, it was never completed. They had to keep doing it over and over and over and over, and so they didn't have a chair. Right? But Jesus made purification for our sins, and then he sat down. Right? It means once and for all. So that means he has won the definitive victory. He's paid it. So in summary, doesn't looking at Jesus' greatness make a huge difference in our lives? It truly does. And as Christians, we have this perspective that, like I said, nobody else on the face of the planet has. We have this amazing perspective, and it should change our lives. So again, the way that seven ways that Jesus is greater, Jesus owns everything, Jesus made everything, Jesus is God's glory, Jesus is God's imprint, he upholds everything, he saves us, and he won the victory. So, a couple questions here. How does the truth that Jesus owns everything, how does that make you think about your home? Right? What about your car? Your family? Your time? How does that make you think about that? It does the truth that Jesus, that the universe is held together by Jesus, and that he sustains the universe, the eons, does that give you confidence that he will sustain you in your financial hardship that you're having? Right? How does the fact that he is the perfect imago Dei, how does that help you respond when somebody does something wrong to you? We have an example, right, in Jesus of what to do. So that's why we need to get in. We need to know what Jesus has done. We need to understand what the gospel is, because we have the perfect example right there of how we should live. How does the reality that Jesus paid for your sin once and for all help you move beyond bondage, beyond maybe even depression, beyond fear, beyond lust, into a place of freedom? Tell you what, Jesus has the power to do it. So the application this week is very simple. It's a single application. It says, reflect on the supremacy of Christ this week. Reflect on that. Take some time to really focus in. Focus your attention, your thoughts on Jesus. And realize that He has power. He has power not only 2,000 years ago when the Father sent Him, when the Father sent the perfect message of His Son into the world. He did miracles. He did all kinds of things that would just blow our mind. But Jesus is alive, and He sits at the right hand of the Father. The Bible says He's making intercession for us. He's active in our lives. And if the God of the universe is making intercession for us, and if the God of the universe is interested in our lives and is connected to our lives, that is powerful. That is powerful. So finally, I want to read a beautiful song. We sang it last week by Chris Tomlin called Our God. Well, Paige might want it. Water you turned into wine. Open the eyes of the blind. Wait, do you want to sing it? All right, I just destroyed that moment. Okay, water you turned into wine. Open the eyes of the blind. There is no one like you. No one like you. Into the darkness you shine. Out of the ashes we rise. There's no one like you. None like you. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. God, you are higher than any other. Our God is healer. Our God is awesome in power. Our God, our God. And if our God is for us, then who could ever stop us? And if our God is with us, then what could stand against? What could stand against?